So with official U.S. sanctions, when he reported this to CIA, CIA appears to have related the information to people in Costa Rica who got that in turn back to Noriega. And it was basically the CIA through Costa Rica informed Noriega. Returning now to the unpublished manuscript by Peter Dale Scott, The Contra Drug Connection, How North Used Powers from Bush to Prevent Its Disclosure. And still later in this particular manuscript, Peter Dale Scott writes as follows. The Kerry Subcommittee's retreat from the agenda of the original Kerry personal... The Kerry Subcommittee's retreat from the agenda of the original Kerry personal staff memorandum of April 1986 is perhaps best illustrated by the treatment of the Spadafora murder. The original memo, whose author was Jonathan Weiner of Kerry's staff, spoke of the alleged murder of Spadafora, quote, by Contras engaged in drug smuggling in Costa Rica, unquote. The full Kerry subcommittee appears not to have investigated the allegation by the Kerry staff witness, Jack Terrell, that Spadafora was murdered with the collusion of three Contra supporters linked to Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas and the John Hall Ranch after Spadafora had denounced them along with Panamanian leader Manuel Noriega to DEA agent Roberto Nieves in Costa Rica. That last sentence once again. The full Kerry subcommittee appears not to have investigated the allegation by the Kerry staff witness, Jack Terrell, that Spadafora was murdered with the collusion of three Contra supporters linked to Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas and the John Hall Ranch after Spadafora had denounced them along with Panamanian leader Manuel Noriega to DEA agent Roberto Nieves in Costa Rica. Now, of course, Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas, that is the Moisés Núñez and Francisco Paco Chanez operation, which in turn appears to link up, certainly the Contra support operations link up with Frank Castro, that in turn appears adjacent to, if not in fact directly connected to, the failure of the People's Savings and Loan in Llano, Texas. Recall the main figure there, Ray Corona. Two big loans, one paid back to the Sunshine State Bank of Corona, one not paid back to Sunshine State Director Harold White. Sunshine State, of course, founded by drug trafficking money, according to Tony Fernandez, an associate of Corona's, one of the unindicted co-conspirators in Tony Fernandez's marijuana smuggling case, Frank Castro, the partner of Paco Chanez and Moisés Núñez. The latter two are basically defendants in the Christic Institute suit. Resuming now with Scott's text, Terrell stated that Spadafora's murder came about because Nieves's information was shared with CIA and ultimately with the murderers. Terrell's claim was indirectly corroborated by two of the Kerry Committee witnesses. A Panamanian friend of Spadafora called Floyd Carlton told the committee that Spadafora was arrested and murdered by Panamanian dictator Manuel Noriega on the basis of information that came from Costa Rica, though from Costa Rican intelligence, quote-unquote, not the CIA station in Costa Rica. Another witness, Noriega's former consul general Jose Blandon, also said that Spadafora, quote, met with a member of the TICA, Costa Rican intelligence, unquote, and made the mistake of telling him that he would soon denounce Noriega's drug smuggling operations. He also testified that initially Noriega was able to blame the Spadafora killing on the left-wing FMLN of El Salvador thanks to a witness, quote-unquote, who was, quote, obtained through the CIA operating in Costa Rica, unquote. The Terrell story of Contra and Costa Rica's CIA involvement in the Spadafora killing was an allegation of the highest significance. We shall see that Spadafora's death may have been related to changes in the Southern Front command structure and also in the drug traffic. Yet it was not investigated by the full subcommittee, despite its obsession with Noriega. Instead, under the intriguing rubric, U.S. knowledge of Noriega's activities, quote-unquote, the final Kerry report says only, quote, subcommittee witnesses testified that Noriega arranged to have Spadafora tortured and murdered by members of the Panamanian Defense Forces in September of 1985. The possibility that the three Contra supporters were in on the plot is not addressed. We should not be ungrateful for what the Kerry subcommittee investigation did achieve. It has indeed documented through its exhibits the ongoing symbiotic relationship between Contra support activities and drug smuggling to which the original staff memo referred. But as so often happens in Washington, things happened along the way to divert it from areas which the CIA, as well as North, clearly regarded as sensitive. A similar resistance, we should add, obstructed the Iran-Contra investigation, and more importantly, the Christic suit. The final Carrier Report's handling or non-handling of the Spadafora allegation is representative of the way it turned its back on the original Kerry staff memorandum and witnesses. Kerry's retreat from the allegations in his original staff memo and report increases the significance of the Christic Institute suit, whose concurrent allegations in this area are now corroborated in many respects by the Kerry exhibits. And in turn, of course, we now see some of the same people implicated in that milieu, the people in and around Frank Chanez, Frank Castro, Moises Nunez. We see some of the same elements implicated in the murder of Hugo Spadafora. Good evening. Welcome back once again to One Step Beyond, the prepared portion of One Step Beyond. I'm going to read a couple of more articles here, and we will reprise these articles at the beginning of next week's broadcast. Perhaps, who knows, I'll replay the sections of the broadcast that I've taped in the last hour or so, by way of leading up into the concluding portion of the SNL scandal and apparently or possibly related activities. And again, I don't know what possible connections may exist between Sunflow, between the unnamed Denver case that Alfredo Sanchez was so very much involved with, the fellow who's the informant of the Noriega case, and the Silverado Savings and Loan, and Neil Bush. But it's certainly a very important question to ask, and I suspect if the answers were ever to come to light, it would be, there'd be a lot of people paying some very heavy dues. Something which to me is as grotesquely ironic as Arthur Fletcher implicated in some ways in the Sunflow operation, though not necessarily in criminal activity, although who knows if that case were ever fully investigated. But Arthur Fletcher's connections to Sunflow, and certainly Sunflow appears to have been involved in bringing some of the cocaine into this country that has received so much publicity. It's interesting that he was the fellow not only who has been appointed to head up the Federal Civil Rights Commission, and, of course, one of the questions you want to ask when you see something like that is if, in fact, he was involved in the Sunflow case, whether or not he would then be operating with what is known as a leash on him. In other words, he is potentially blackmailable if, and I'm not saying he was, but if, in fact, he was involved in some kind of criminal activity, that involvement could be used to control Arthur Fletcher and, through that, the Federal Civil Rights Commission. But it's interesting that the Sunflow case has received so little national publicity. But his opponent for the mayoralty of Washington, D.C., Marion Barry, has basically achieved tabloid superstar status as a result of his ridiculous indiscretion in smoking crack cocaine. I mean, certainly that's not something I'm sanctioning, but the difference here between use and trafficking is one to be taking note of. And, again, there are some serious questions, I think, to be asked and answered about Arthur Fletcher and his possible involvement in that. Certainly it's grotesque to see all the publicity about Marion Barry, who deserves the censure he's gotten, though perhaps not quite as much publicity in light of the relative unimportance of the case. But then we have Arthur Fletcher receiving no publicity concerning the Sunflow case. Perhaps he wasn't involved in criminal activity, but we've seen an awful lot of denials in these kinds of cases, and not many of them have been convincing ones. There was a recent development also in the news which has to match the Arthur Fletcher, Marion Barry situation for grotesque irony. Reading again from the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, February 24th of 1990, that's the very same issue of the Chronicle, the very same edition of the Chronicle that carried the case, the article about Arthur Fletcher being appointed or named by Bush to head the Federal Civil Rights Commission, contains an article about some recent unkind comments by outgoing U.S. Attorney Joseph Russaniello about Latinos. This Chronicle article, again, SF Chronicle, Saturday, February 24th of 1990, is by Maitland Zane of the Chronicle staff. It's headlined, Hispanic Leaders Urge Boycott of Firm That Hired Russaniello. Protesting what they called racism, quote-unquote, Hispanic leaders launched a boycott campaign yesterday to punish one of San Francisco's most prominent law firms for rehiring U.S. Attorney Joseph Russaniello. Russaniello, a hardline conservative, is leaving his federal job April 2nd, to rejoin the firm of Cooley, Godward, Huddleston, and Tatum as a partner. The 48-year-old former FBI agent drew loud protests last month when he charged that San Francisco is a logical place for drug dealers because of the, quote, strong Hispanic community that could provide protection and insulation from law enforcement, unquote. Now, note that in particular. The 48-year-old former FBI agent drew loud protests last month when he charged that San Francisco is a logical place for drug dealers because of the, quote, strong Hispanic community that could provide protection and insulation from law enforcement, unquote. Although he apologized for any misunderstanding, Russiniello singed himself further by insisting that he was only telling the truth about the, quote, disproportionate amount of drug dealers of Hispanic ancestry, unquote. Along with the outcry from Hispanic groups, San Francisco's Board of Supervisors called for Russiniello's immediate resignation as Northern California's top federal prosecutor, even before the date of his long-planned departure. Well, keep in mind his comments about how the Hispanic community would insulate drug traffickers from law enforcement, and also that the demand by the California Board of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors that he resign as Northern California's top prosecutor, there are indications that he should have done that a long time ago. Research credit on the following article goes to Mae Brussel, the late Mae Brussel. She got this from the San Francisco Examiner of Tuesday, April 5th of 1988. This is an article by Seth Rosenfeld of the Examiner's staff. It's headlined, Dealer's Testimony to Panel Blocked. Subheaded, Justice Department says Senate appearance jeopardizes prosecution of Bay cocaine case. Protests by the U.S. Justice Department have delayed Senate testimony of a Bay Area man who claims he smuggled cocaine to help support the Contra rebels in Nicaragua. A Justice Department official said the testimony of Carlos A. Cabezas, a used car dealer from Daly City, now in federal prison for cocaine sales, could jeopardize a pending San Francisco cocaine prosecution. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted last Tuesday to obtain a court order requiring Cabezas to appear in Washington, D.C. for hearings this week concerning links between narcotics traffickers and governments in the Western Hemisphere. The hearings began Monday before the Senate Relations before the Foreign Relations Subcommittee on Narcotics, Terrorism, and International Operations, headed by Senator John Kerry, a Democrat of Massachusetts. The Examiner has reported that Cabezas testified in a 1983 San Francisco federal trial that some profits from his cocaine ring, quote, belonged to the Contra Revolution, unquote. Skipping down in the article, Cabezas, a 42-year-old native of Nicaragua, is serving a 10-year sentence at the federal prison in Phoenix on his 1983 conviction for conspiracy to distribute cocaine. In that case, federal prosecutors returned $36,020 originally seized as suspected drug money from Julio Zavala, one of Cabezas' crime partners. The money was returned to Zavala after two Contra officials in Costa Rica said it was really Contra money for, quote, the reinstatement of democracy in Nicaragua. Hang on to your hats. Joseph P. Russiniello, U.S. attorney in San Francisco, said the money had been returned to Zavala only because fighting over the issue would have required costly investigations in Costa Rica. He said the government never determined whether there was a Contra connection to the case and sought maximum punishment for Zavala and Cabezas. After the Examiner disclosed the letter, Francisco Aviles, one of the Contra officials in Costa Rica who identified the $36,020 as Contra money, was expelled from his Contra group, the United Nicaraguan Opposition, Nicaraguan Revolutionary Armed Forces, according to the State Department. Of course, United Nicaraguan Opposition is UNO, recently elected in Nicaragua. But obviously, one of the key people involved in this decision to return the money to the Contras, Joseph Russiniello. So apparently, if in fact his racist allegations concerning the Latin community in the Bay Area and their role in insulating drug traffickers from law enforcement is true, and I'm not saying it is, certainly Joseph Russiniello is no one to talk. He has certainly played his part in insulating not only drug traffickers, but Latin drug traffickers, specifically those working on behalf of the Contras, from the very law enforcement apparatus he is part of. And what we're going to be looking at next week is the involvement of people from Joseph Russiniello's office with the LenVest bankruptcy case. And we're going to look at some interesting connecting links between elements of the Contra support effort, people involved in the Christic suit, the drug tug case, and related developments. That we will take up next week when we come back to the CIA and the SNL. That about winds it up for me for this evening. We will conclude together the CIA and the SNL and related links. Next week, I will sum up some of the information we presented so far, and I will recap some of the things either by tape or perhaps reread some information next week so that we can resume the thread of the discussion and maintain a view of some of these connections. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you tape this because, again, that's what it's for. If not, bear in mind, within a few weeks, it will be available from archives and audio. More information next week. Be sure to tune in. Thanks for listening and good night.